Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of my podcast of The Legend of Drizzt, my dramatic reading. My name is Chadwick Daigle, and I just want to say thank you to all of you folks that have been reaching out to me and letting me know how much you enjoy and appreciate my podcast of this dramatic reading of R.A. Salvatore's The Legend of Drizzt series. We are on book two, Exile, and without further ado, we will continue with part two, The Informant. Counselor Ferbel of Blingdenstone moved tentatively into the small, rough-hewn cavern, the appointed meeting place. An army of Svefnebli, including several deep gnome enchanters holding stones that could summon earth elemental allies, moved into defensive positions along the corridors to the west of the room. Despite this, Ferbel was not at ease. He looked down the eastern tunnel, the only other entrance into the chamber, wondering what information his agent would have for him and worrying over how much it would cost. Then the drow made his swaggering entrance, his high black boots kicking loudly on the stone. His gaze darted about quickly to ensure that Ferbel was the only Svefneblin in the chamber. Their usual deal. Then strode up to the deep gnome counselor and dropped into a low bow. "Greetings, little friend, with the big purse," the drow said with a laugh. His command of the Svefneblin language and dialect, with the perfect inflections and pauses of the deep gnome who had lived a century of Blingdenstone, always amazed Ferbel.
"You could exercise some caution," Ferbel retorted, again glancing around anxiously.
"Bah!" the drow snorted, clicking the hard heels of his boots together. "You have an army of deep gnome fighters and wizards behind you, and I, well, let us agree that I am well protected as well."
"The fact that I do not doubt Jarlaxle," Ferbel replied. "Still, I would prefer that our business remain as private and as secretive as possible."
"Of all the business of Brigandarth is private, my friend Ferbel," Jarlaxle answered, and again he bowed low, sweeping his wide-brimmed hat in a long and graceful arc.
"Enough of that," said Ferbel. "Let us be done with our business so that I may return to my home."
"Then ask," said Jarlaxle.
"There has been an increase in drow activity near Blingdenstone," explained the deep drow gnome.
"Has there?" Jarlaxle asked, appearing surprised. The drow smirk revealed his true emotions, though. This would be an easy profit for Jarlaxle, for the very same matron mother in Menzel Branson who had recently employed him was undoubtedly connected with the Blingdenstone's distress. Jarlaxle liked coincidences that made the profits come easy. Ferbel knew the ploy of the feigned surprise all too well.
"There has," he said firmly.
"And you wish to know why?" Jarlaxle reasoned, still holding a facade of ignorance.
"It would seem prudent from our vantage point," huffed the counselor, tired of Jarlaxle's unending game. Ferbel knew without any doubts that Jarlaxle was aware of the drow activity near Blingdenstone and of the purpose behind it.
Jarlaxle was a rogue without house, normally an unhealthy position in the world of the Dark Elves. Yet this resourceful mercenary survived, even thrived, in his renegade position. Through it all, Jarlaxle's greatest advantage was knowledge. Knowledge of every stirring within Menzel Branson and the regions surrounding the city.
"How long will you require?" Ferbel asked. "My king wishes to complete this business as swiftly as possible."
"Have you my payment?" the drow asked, holding out a hand.
"Payment when you bring me the information," Ferbel protested. "That has always been our agreement."
"So it has," agreed Jarlaxle. "This time, though, I need no time to gather your information. If you have my gems, we can be done with our business right now."
Ferbel pulled the pouch of gems from his belt and tossed them to the drow. 50 agates, finely cut," he said with a growl, never pleased by the price.
He had hoped to avoid using Jarlaxle this time. Like any deep gnome, Ferbel did not easily part with such sums.
Jarlaxle quickly glanced into the pouch, then dropped it into a deep pocket.
"Rest easy, little deep gnome," he began, "for the powers who rule Menzel Branson plan no actions against your city. A single drow house has an interest in the region, nothing more."
"Why?" Rebel asked after a long moment of silence had passed. The Svepneblin hated having to ask, knowing the inevitable consequence. Jarlaxle held out his hand. 10 more finely cut agates passed over. "The house searches for one of its own," Jarlaxle explained. "A renegade whose actions have put his family out of favor with the Spider Queen." Again, a few interminable moments of silence passed. Ferbel could easily guess enough the identity of this hunted drow, but King Schnicktick would roar until the ceiling fell in if he didn't make certain. He pulled 10 more gemstones from his belt pouch. "Name the house," he said. "Damon Neshazbernan," replied Jarlaxle, casually dropping the gems into his deep pocket. Ferbel crossed his arms over his chest and scowled. The unscrupulous drow had caught him once again. "Not the ancestral name," the counselor growled grudgingly, pulling out another 10 gems.
"Really, Ferbel," Jarlaxle teased, "you must learn to be more specific in your questioning. Such errors do cost you so much."
"Name the house in terms that I might understand," Ferbel instructed, "and name the hunted renegade. No more will I pay you this day, Jarlaxle."
Jarlaxle held up his hand and smiled to silence the deep gnome.
"Agreed," he laughed, more than satisfied with his take. "House Dorden, 8th house of Menzelbrands, and searches for its second boy."
The mercenary noted a hint of recognition in Ferbel's expression. Might this little meeting provide Jarlaxle with information that he could turn into further profit at the coffers of Matron Malice?
"Drizzt is his name," the drow continued, carefully studying the Svepneblin's reaction. Slyly, he added, "Information of his whereabouts would bring a high profit to Menzelbrandsen."
Ferbel stared at the brash drow for a long time. Had he given away too much when the renegade's identity had been revealed? If Jarlaxle had guessed that Drizzt was in the Deep Gnome City, the implications could be grim. Now Ferbel was in a predicament. Should he admit his mistake and try to correct it? But how much would it cost Ferbel to buy Jarlaxle's promise of silence? And no matter how great the payment, could Ferbel really trust the unscrupulous mercenary?
"Our business is at its end," Ferbel announced, deciding to crust that Jarlaxle had guessed not enough to bargain with House Dorden.
The counselor turned on his heel and started out of the chamber. Jarlaxle secretly applauded Ferbel's decision. He had always believed the Svepneblin counselor a worthy bargaining adversary and was not now disappointed. Ferbel had revealed little information, too little to take to Major Malice, and if the Deep Gnome had more to give, his decision to abruptly end the meeting was a wise one, in spite of their racial differences.
"Little gnome," he cried out after the departing figure, "I offer you a warning."
Ferbel spun back, his hand defensively covering his closed gem pouch.
"Free of charge," Jarlaxle said with a laugh and a shake of his bald head. But then the mercenary's visage turned suddenly serious, even grim. "If you know of Drizzt D'Ordan," Jarlaxle continued, "keep him far away. Loth herself has charged Matron Malice D'Ordan with Drizzt's death, and Malice will do whatever she must to accomplish the task. And even if Malice fails, others will take up the hunt, knowing that the Doordan's death will bring great pleasure to the Spider Queen. He is doomed, Ferbel, and so doomed will be any foolish enough to stand beside him."
"An unnecessary warning," Ferbel replied, trying to keep his expression calm, "for none in Blinkenstone know or care anything for this renegade dark elf. Nor, I assure you, do any in Blinkenstone hold any desire to find the favor of the dark elf Spider Queen deity."
Jarlaxle smiled knowingly at the Svepneblin's bluff.
"Of course," he replied, and he swept off his grand hat, dropping into yet another bow.
Ferbel paused a moment to consider the words on the bow, wondering again if he should try to buy the mercenary's silence. Before he came to any decision, though, Jarlaxle was gone, clumping his hard boots loudly with every departing step. Poor Ferbel was left to wonder. He needn't have. Jarlaxle did indeed like little Ferbel, the mercenary admitted to himself as he departed, and he would not divulge his suspicions of Drizzt's whereabouts to Matron Malice. Unless, of course, the offer was simply too tempting. Ferbel just stood and watched the empty chamber for many minutes, wondering and worrying. For Drizzt, the days had been filled with friendship and fun. He was somewhat of a hero with the Swift Neblin miners who had gone out in the tunnels beside him, and the story of his clever deception against the goblin tribe grew with every telling. Drizzt and Belwer went out often now, and whenever they entered a tavern or meeting house, they were greeted by cheers and offers of free food and drink. Both the friends were glad for the other, for together they had found their place and their peace. Already, Borough Warden Brickers and Belwer were busily planning another mining expedition. Their biggest task was narrowing the list of volunteers, for Swift Nebley from every corner of the city had contacted them, eager to travel beside the Dark Elf and the most honored Borough Warden. When a loud and insistent knock came one morning on Belwer's door, both Drizzt and the Deep Gnome figured it to be more recruits looking for a place in the expedition. They were indeed surprised to find the city guard waiting for them, bidding Drizzt at the point of a dozen spears to go with them to an audience with the king. Belwer appeared unconcerned. "A precaution," he assured Drizzt, pushing away his breakfast plate of mushrooms and moss sauce. Belwer went to the wall to grab his cloak, and if Drizzt, concentrating on the spears, had noticed Belwer's jerking and unsure movements, the drow most certainly would not have been assured. The journey through the Deep Gnome City was quick indeed, with the anxious guards prodding the drow and the Borough Warden along. Belwer continued to brush the whole thing off as a precaution with every step, and in truth, Belwer did find a job keeping a measure of calm in his round-toned voice. But Drizzt carried no suspicion, illusions with him into the king's chambers. All of his life had been filled with crashing ends to promising beginnings.
King Schnicktick sat uncomfortably on his stone throne, his counselors standing equally ill at ease around him. He did not like this duty that had been placed upon his shoulders. The Swift Nebley considered themselves loyal friends, but in light of Counselor Ferbel's revelations, the threat to Blinginstone could not be ignored, especially not for the likes of a Dark Elf. Drizzt and Belwer moved to stand before the king, Drizzt curious, though ready to accept whatever might come of this, but Belwer on the edge of anger.
"My thanks in your prompt arrival,"
King Schnicktick greeted them, and he cleared his throat and looked around to his counselors for support.
"Spears do keep one in motion," Belwer snarled sarcastically.
The Swift Nebbin cleared his king cleared his throat again, noticeably uncomfortable, and shifted in his seat.
"My God does get a bit excited," he apologized. "Please take no offense."
"None taken," Drizzt assured him.
"Your time in our city you have enjoyed?"
Schnicktick asked, managing a bit of a smile.
Drizzt nodded. "Your people have been gracious beyond anything I could have asked for or expected," he replied.
"And you have proven yourself a worthy friend, Drizzt Owen," Schnicktick said. "Truly our lives have been enriched by your presence."
Drizzt bowed low, full of gratitude for the Swift Nebbling King's kind words, but Belwer narrowed his dark gray eyes and crinkled his hooked nose, beginning to understand what the king was leading up to.
"Unfortunately,"
King Schnicktick began, looking around, pleading to his counselors and not directly at Drizzt,
"a situation has come upon us."
"Maga Kamara!" shouted Belwer, startling everyone in tennis.
No!
King Schnicktick and Drizzt looked at the Borough Warden in disbelief.
"You mean to put him out?"
Belwer snarled accusingly at Schnicktick. "Belwer!" Drizzt began to protest.
"Most honored Borough Warden," the Swift Nebblin King said sternly, "it's not your place to interrupt. If again you do so, I will be forced to have you removed from this chamber."
"It is true, then," Belwer groaned softly. He looked away. Drizzt glanced from the king to Belwer and back again, confused as to the purpose behind the whole encounter.
"You have heard of the suspected drow activity in the tunnels near our eastern borders?"
the king asked Drizzt. Drizzt nodded.
"We have learned the purpose of this activity," Schnicktick explained.
The paws of the Swift Nebblin King looked yet another time to his counselors sent shivers through Drizzt's spine. He knew beyond any doubts what was coming next, but the words wounded him deeply anyway.
"You, Drizzt Dorden, are that purpose."
"My mother searches for me," Drizzt replied flatly.
"But she will not find you.
Belwar snarled in defiance, aimed at both Snicktick and this unknown mother of his new friend.
Not while you remain in as a guest of the Deep Gnomes of Blindedstone. Belwar, hold! King Snicktick scolded.
He looked back to Drizzt and his vision softened.
Please, friend Drizzt, you must understand. I cannot risk war with Menzel Baranzin.
I do understand, Drizzt assured him with sincerity. I will gather my things.
No!
Belwar protested. He rushed up to the throne.
We are Swift Nebli! We do not put out friends in the face of danger!
The borough warden ran from counselor to counselor, pleading for justice.
Only friendship has Drizzt Warden shown us, and we would put him out? Maga Kamara! If our loyalties are so fragile, are we any better than the drow of Menzel Baranzin? Enough, most honored borough warden, King Snicktick cried out in a tone of finality that even stubborn Belwar could not ignore. Our decision did not come easily to us, but it is final. I will not put Blingingstone in jeopardy for the sake of a dark elf, no matter that he has shown himself to be a friend.
Snicktick looked to Drizzt.
I am truly sorry.
Do not be, Drizzt replied. You do only as you must, as I did on that long ago day when I chose to forsake my people. That decision I made alone and have never asked for any approval or aid. You good King Svefniblin and your people have given me back so much that I had lost. Believe that I have no desire to invoke the wrath of Menzel Baranzin against Blindenstone. I would never forgive myself if I played any part in that tragedy. I will be gone from your fair city within the hour, and in parting I offer only gratitude. The Svefniblin king was touched by the words, but his position remained unbending. He motioned for his guardsmen to accompany Drizzt, who accepted the armed escort with a resigned sigh. He looked once to Belwar, standing helplessly beside the Svefniblin counselors, then left the king's halls. 100 deep gnomes, particularly the borough warden Krieger and the other miners of the single expedition Drizzt had accompanied, said their farewells to the drow as he walked out of Blingdenstone's huge doors. Conspicuously absent was Belwar Disengulp. Drizzt had not seen the borough warden at all in the hour since he had left the throne room. Still, Drizzt was grateful for the send-off these Svefnebli gave him. Their kind words comforted him and gave him the strength that he knew he would need in the trials of the coming years. Of all the memories Drizzt would take out of Blingdenstone, he vowed to hold on to those parting words. Still, when Drizzt moved away from the gathering across the small platform and down the wide staircase, he heard only the resounding echoes of the enormous doors slamming shut behind him. Drizzt trembled as he looked down the tunnels of the wild Underdark, wondering how he could possibly survive the trials this time. Blingdenstone had been his salvation from the hunter. How long would it take that darker side to rear up again and steal his identity? But what choice did Drizzt have? Leaving Menzel Baranzin had been his decision, the right decision. Now, though, knowing better the consequences of his choice, Drizzt wondered about his resolve. Given the opportunity to do it all over again, would he now find the strength to walk away from his life among his people? He hoped that he would. A shuffle off to the side brought Drizzt alert. He crouched and drew his scimitars, thinking that Maitre Malice had agents waiting for him who had expected him to be expelled from Blingdenstone. A shadow moved, and a moment later, but it was no drow assassin that came in at Drizzt. Belwar! He cried in relief. I fear that you would not say farewell.
And I will not, replied the Svefniblin.
Drizzt studied the borough warden, noticing this full pack of that Belwar wore.
No, Belwar, I cannot allow.
I do not remember asking your permission, the deep gnome interrupted. I have been looking for some excitement in my life. Thought I might venture out and see what the wide world has to offer.
It is not as grand as you expect, Drizzt replied grimly. You have your people, Belwar. They accept you and care for you. That is a greater gift than anything you can imagine.
Agreed, replied the Borough Warden. And you, Drisdorden, have your friend, who accepts you and cares for you, and stands beside you. Now, are we going to be on this adventure, or are we going to stand here and wait for that wicked mother of yours to walk up and cut us down?
You cannot begin to imagine the dangers, Drizzt warned, but Belwa could see that the drow's resolve was already starting to wear away.
Belwa banged his mithril hands together. And you, Dark Elf, cannot begin to imagine the ways I can deal with such dangers. I am not letting you walk off alone into the wilds. Understand that as fact, Maga Kamara. And we can get on with things.
Driz shrugged helplessly, looked once more to the stubborn determination stamped openly on Belwar's face, and started off down the tunnel, the deep gnome falling into step at his side. This time, at least, Drizzt had a companion he could talk to, a weapon against the intrusions of the hunter. He put his hand to his pocket and fingered the Guinevere's onyx figurine. Perhaps, Drizzt dared to hope, the three of them would have a chance to find more than simple survival in the Underdark. For a long time afterward, Drizzt wondered if he had acted selfishly in giving in so easily to Belwer. Whatever the guilt he felt, however, could not begin to compare with the profound sense of relief Drizzt knew whenever he looked down at his side to the most honored Borough Warden's bald, bobbing head.
Part 3. Friends and Foes.
To live or to survive. Until my second time out in the wilds of the Underdark, after my stay in Blingdenstone, I never would have understood the significance of such a simple question. When first I left Menzelberranzan, and I thought survival enough. I thought that I could fall within myself, within my principles, and be satisfied that I had followed the only course open to me. The alternative was the grim reality of Menzelberranzan and compliance with the wicked ways that guided my people. If that was life, I believed simply surviving would be far preferable. And yet, that simple survival nearly killed me. Worse, it nearly stole everything that I held dear. The Svirfnebli of Blindenstone showed me a different way. Svirfneblin society, structured and nurtured on communal values and unity, proved to be everything that I had always hoped Menzelberranzan would be. The Svirfnebli did much more than merely survive. They lived and laughed and worked, and the gains they made were shared by the whole, as was the pain of the losses they inevitably suffered in the hostile subsurface world. Joy multiplies when it is shared among friends, but grief diminishes with every division. That is life. And so, when I walked back out of Blindenstone, back into the empty Underdark's lonely chambers, I walked with hope. At my side went Belwa, my new friend, and in my pocket went the magical figurine that could summon Guinevere, my proven friend. In my brief stay with the Deep Gnomes, I had witnessed life as I always hoped it would be. I could not return to simply surviving. With my friends beside me, I dared to believe that I would not have to. Drizzt d'Urden. Chapter 12. Wilds, Wilds, Wilds.
Did you set it? Drizzt asked Belwa when the Borough Warden returned to his side in the winding passage.
The fire pit is cut, Belwa replied, tapping his mithril hands triumphantly, but not too loudly, together. And I rumpled the extra bedroll off in a corner. Scraped my boots all over the stone and put your neck purse in a place where it will easily be found. I even left a few silver coins under the blanket. I figure I'll not be needing them any time soon anyway.
Belwar managed to chuckle, but despite the disclaimer, Drizzt could see that the Svirfneblin did not so easily part with valuables.
A fine deception, Drizzt offered to take away the sting of the cost.
And what of you, Dark Elf? Belwar asked. Have you seen or heard anything?
Nothing, Drizzt replied. He pointed down a side corridor. I sent Guinevere away on a wide circuit. If anyone is near, we will soon know.
Belwa nodded.
Good plan, he remarked. Setting the false camp this far from Blingstone should keep your troublesome mother from my kinfolk.
And perhaps it will lead my family to believe that I am still in the region and plan to remain, Drizzt added hopefully. Have you given any thought to our destination?
One way is as good as another, remarked Balwer, hoisting his hands out wide. No cities are there, beyond our own, anywhere close. None to my knowledge, at least.
West, then, offered Drizzt. Around Blingstone and off into the wild, straight away from Menzel Branson.
A wise course, it would seem, agreed the Borough Warden.
Balwer closed his eyes and attuned his thoughts to the emanations of the stone. Like many Underdark races, Deep Moon's gnomes possessed the ability to recognize magnetic variations in the rock, an ability that allowed them to judge direction as accurately as a surface dweller might follow the sun's trail. A moment later, Balwer nodded and pointed down the appropriate tunnel.
West, Balwer said, and quickly. The more distance you put between yourself and that mother of yours, the safer we shall be.
He paused to consider Drizzt for a long moment, wondering if he might be prodding his new friend a bit too deeply with his next question.
What is it? Drizzt asked him, recognizing his apprehension.
Balwer decided to risk it, to see just how close he and Drizzt had become.
When you first learned that you were the reason for the drow activity in the Eastern Tunnels, the Deep Gnome began bluntly, you seemed a bit weak in the knees, if you understand me. They are your family, Dark Elf. Are they so terrible?
Drizzt chuckled, put Balwer at ease, told the Deep Gnome that he had not pressed too far.
Come, Drizzt said, seeing Guinevere return from the scouting trek. If the deception of our camp is complete, then let us take our first steps into our new life. Our road should be long enough for tales of my home and family.
Hold, Balwer said. He reached into his pocket and produced a small coffer. A gift from King Schnicktick,
he explained as he lifted the lid and removed the glowing brooch, its queer illumination bathing the area around them. Drizzt stared at the Burrow Warden in disbelief.
It will mark you as a fine target, the drow remarked.
Balwer corrected him.
It will mark us as fine targets, he said with a sly snort. But fear not, Dark Elf. The light will keep more enemies at bay than it will bring. I am not so fond of tripping on the crags and chips in the floor.
How long will it glow? Drizzt asked,
and Balwer gathered from his tone that the drow hoped it would fade soon.
Forever is this dwomer.
Balwer replied with a wide smirk,
unless some priest or wizard counters it. Stop your worrying. What creatures of the Underdark would willingly walk into an illuminated area?
Drizzt shrugged and trusted in the experienced Borough Warden's judgment.
Very well, he said, shaking his white mane helplessly. Then off for the road.
The road and the tales, replied Balwer, falling into step beside Drizzt, his stout little legs rolling along to keep up with the drow's long and graceful strides.
They walked for many hours, stopped for a meal, then walked for many more. Sometimes Balwer used his illuminating brooch. Other times the friends walked in darkness. Depending on whether or not they perceived danger in the area, Guinevere was frequently about yet rarely seen, the panther eagerly taking up its appointed duties as a perimeter guard. For a 10-day straight, the companions stopped only when weariness or hunger forced a break in the march, for they were anxious to be as far from Blingstone and from those hunting Drizzt as possible. Still, another full 10 days would pass before the companions moved out into the tunnels that Balwer did not know. The Deep Gnome had been a Borough Warden for almost 50 years, and he had led many of Blingstone's farthest-reaching mining expeditions.
This place is known to me,
Balwer often remarked when they entered a cavern.
Took a wagon of iron,
he would say, or mithril, or a multitude of other precious minerals that Drizzt had never even heard of. And though the Borough Warden's extended tales of those mining expeditions all ran in basically the same direction, how many ways can a Deep Gnome chop stone? Drizzt always listened intently, savoring every word. He knew the alternative. For his part in the storytelling, Drizzt recounted his adventures at Menzel Branson's academy and his many fond memories of Zeknafian in the training gym. He showed Balwer the double thrust low and how the pupil had discovered a parry to counter the attack, to his mental surprise and pain. Drizzt displayed the intricate hand and facial combinations of the silent drow code, and he briefly entertained the notion of teaching the language to Balwer. The deep gnome promptly burst out loud in rolling laughter. His dark eyes looked incredulously at Drizzt, and he led the drow's gaze down at the ends of his arms, with a hammer and a pickaxe for hands. The Swift Neblin could hardly muster enough gestures to make the effort worthwhile. Still, Belwar appreciated that Drizzt had offered to teach him the silent code. The absurdity of it all gave them both a fine laugh. Guinevere and the Deep Gnome also became friends during those first couple of 10 days on the trail. Often, Belwar would fall into a deep slumber only to be awakened by prickling in his legs, fast asleep under the weight of 600 pounds of panther. Belwar always grumbled and swatted Guinevere on the rump with his hammer hand. It became a game between the two, but Belwar truly didn't mind the panther being so close. In fact, Guinevere's mere presence made sleep, which always left one so vulnerable in the wilds, much easier to come by.
"Do you understand?" Drizzt whispered to Guinevere one day. Off to the side, Belwar was fast asleep, flat on his back on the stone, using a pillow, a rock for a pillow. Drizzt shook his head in continued amazement when he studied the little figure. He was beginning to suspect that the deep gnomes carried their affinity with the earth a bit too far. "Go get him," he prompted the cat. Guinevere lumbered over and plopped across the burrow warden's legs. Drizzt moved away into the shielding entrance of a tunnel to watch. Only a few minutes later, Belwar awoke with a snarl.
"Maga Kamara, panther!" the deep gnome growled. "Why must you always bend down on me instead of beside me?"
Guinevere shifted slightly, but let out only a deep sigh in response.
"Maga Kamara, cat!"
Belwar roared again. He wiggled his toes frantically, trying to futilely to keep the circulation going and dismiss the tingles that had already begun.
"Away with you!"
The burrow warden propped himself up on one elbow and swung his hammer hand at Guinevere's backside. Guinevere sprang away and feigned flight, quicker than Belwar's swat. But just as the burrow warden relaxed, the panther cut back on its tracks, pivoted completely, and leaped atop Belwar, burying him and pinning him flat to the stone. After a few moments of struggling, Belwar managed to get his face out from under Guinevere's muscled chest.
"Get yourself off of me or suffer the consequences!"
the deep gnome growled, obviously an empty threat. Guinevere shifted, getting a bit more comfortable in its perch.
"Dark elf!"
Belwar called as loudly as he dared.
"Dark elf, take your panther away! Dark elf!"
"Greetings," Drizzt answered, walking in from the tunnel as though he had only just arrived. "Are you two playing again? I had thought my time as sentry near its end."
"Your time is past," replied Belwar,
but the Swift Neblin's words were muffled by thick black fur as Guinevere shifted again. Drizzt could see Belwar's long hooked nose, though, crinkle up in irritation.
"Oh, no, no," he said, Drizzt. "I am not so tired. I would not think of interrupting your game. I know that you both enjoy it so."
He walked by, giving Guinevere a complimentary pat on the head and a sly wink as he passed.
"Dark elf!"
grumbled Belwar at his back as Drizzt departed. But the drow kept going, and Guinevere, with Drizzt's blessings, soon fell fast asleep.
Drizzt crouched low and held very still, letting his eyes go through the dramatic shift from infravision, viewing the heat of the objects in the infrared spectrum, to normal vision in the realm of light. Even before the transformation was completed, Drizzt could tell that his guess had been correct. Ahead, beyond a low natural archway, came a red glow. The drow held his position, deciding to watch Belwar catch up to him before he went to investigate. Only a moment later, the dimmer glow of the deep gnome's enchanted brooch came into view.
"Put out your light," Drizzt whispered, and the brooch's glow disappeared. Belwar crept along the tunnel to join his companion. He, too, saw the red glow beyond the archway and understood Drizzt's caution.
"Can you bring your panther?" the burrow warden asked quietly.
Drizzt shook his head. "The magic is limited by spans of time. Walking the material plane tires, Guinevere. The panther needs to rest."
"Back the way we came, we could go," Belwar suggested. "Perhaps there's another tunnel around."
5 miles, Drizzt replied, considering the length of the unbroken passageway behind them. "Too long."
Then let us see what is ahead, the Burrow Warden reasoned, and he started off boldly. Driz liked Belwar's straightforward attitude and quickly joined him. Beyond the archway, which Driz had to crouch nearly double to get under, they found a wide and high cavern, its floor and walls covered in a moss-like growth that emitted the red light. Driz pulled up short at a loss, but Belwar recognized the stuff well enough. "Baruchis!" the Burrow Warden blurted, the word turning into a chuckle. He turned to Driz and not seeing any reaction to his smile, explained, "Crimson spit is, Dark Elf. Not for decades have I seen such a patch of the stuff. Quite a rare sight they are, you know." Driz, still at a loss, shook his tenseness out of his muscles and shrugged, then started forward. Belwar's pickhand hooked him under the arm, and the powerful deep gnome spun him back abruptly. "Crimson spitters," the Burrow Warden said again, pointedly emphasizing the latter of the words. "Magakamara, Dark Elf, how did you get along through the years?" Belwar turned to the side and slammed his hammer hands into the wall of the archway, taking off a fair-sized chunk of stone. He scooped this up in the flat of his pickhand and flipped it off to the side of the cavern. The stone hit the red glowing fungus with a soft thud, then a burst of smoke and spores blasted into the air. "Spit," explained Belwar, "and choke you to death with will the spore. If you plan to cross here, you walk lightly, my brave, foolish friend." Driz scratched his unkempt white locks and considered the predicament. He had no desire to return the 5 miles down the tunnel, but neither did he plan to go plodding through this field of red death. He stood tall just inside the archway and looked around for some solution. Several stones, a possible walkway, rose up out of the baruchis, and beyond them lay a trail of clear stone about 10 feet wide, running perpendicular to the archway across the chasm. "We can make it through," he told Belwar. "There is a clear path." "There always is in a field of baruchis," the Burrow Warden replied under his breath. The Burrow Warden... Driz's keen ears caught the comment. "What do you mean?" he asked, springingly agilely onto the first of the raised stones. "A grubber is about," the deep gnome explained, "or has been."
"A grubber?"
Driz prudently hopped back to stand beside the Burrow Warden. "Big caterpillar," Belwar explained. "Grubbers love baruchis. They are the only things the Crimson Spitters do not seem to bother."
"How big?"
"How wide was the clear path?" Belwar asked him.
10 feet, perhaps," Driz answered, hopping back out of to the first stepping stone to view it again.
Belwar considered the answer for a moment. "One pass for a big grubber, 2 for most."
Driz hopped back to the side of the Burrow Warden again, giving a cautious look over his shoulder. "Big caterpillar," he remarked.
"But with a little mouth," Belwar explained. "Grubbers eat only moss and molds and baruchis. If they can find them, peaceful enough creatures all in all."
For the third time, Driz sprang out onto the stone. "Is there anything else I should know before I continue?" he asked in exasperation. Belwar shook his head. Driz led the way across the stones, and soon the two companions stood in the middle of the 10-foot path. It traversed the cavern and ended with the entrance to a passage on either side. Driz pointed both ways, wondering which direction Belwar would prefer. The deep gnome started to the left, then stopped abruptly and peered ahead. Driz understood Belwar's hesitation, for he, too, felt the vibrations in the stone under his feet.
"Grubber," said Belwar. "Stand quiet and watch, my friend. They are quite a sight."
Driz smiled wide and crouched low, eager for the entertainment. When he heard a quick shuffle behind him, though, Driz began to suspect that something was out of sorts. "What?" Driz began to ask when he turned about and saw Belwar in full flight toward the other exit. Driz stopped speaking abruptly when an explosion like the crash of a cave-in erupted from the other way, the way he had been watching.
"Quite a sight!" he heard Belwar call, and he couldn't deny the truth of the deep gnome's words when the grubber made its appearance.
It was huge, bigger than the basilisk Driz had killed.
and looked like a gigantic pale gray worm, except for the multitude of little feet pumping along beside its massive torso. Driz saw that Belwer had not lied, for the thing had no mouth to speak of and no talons or other apparent weapons. But the giant was coming straight at Driz with a vengeance now, and Driz couldn't get the image of a flattened dark elf stretched from one end of the cavern to the other out of his mind. He reached for his scimitars, then realized the absurdity of the plan. Where would he hit the thing to slow it? Throwing his hands helplessly out wide, Driz spun on his heel and fled after the departing burrow warden. The ground shook under Driz's feet so violently that he wondered if he might topple to the side and be blasted by the Baruchis. But then the tunnel entrance was just ahead, and Driz could see a smaller side passage, too small for the grubber, just outside the Baruchi cavern. He darted ahead the last few strides, then cut swiftly into the small tunnel, diving into a roll to break his momentum. Still, he ricocheted hard off the wall. Then the grubber slammed in behind him, smashing at the tunnel entrance and dropping pieces of stone all about. When the dust finally cleared, the grubber remained outside the passage, humming a low, growling moan, and every so often banging his head against the stone. Belwer just stood a few feet farther in than Driz, the deep gnome's arms crossed over his chest and a satisfied grin on his face. "Peaceful enough?" Driz asked, rising to his feet and shaking off the dust. "They are indeed," replied Belwer with a nod. "But grubbers do love the Baruchis and have no mind to share the things." "He almost got me crushed," Driz snarled at him. Again Belwer nodded. "Mark it well, dark elf. For the next time you set your panther to sleep on me, I will surely do worse." Driz fought hard to hide his smile. His heart still pumped wildly under the influence of the adrenaline burst, but Driz held no anger toward his companion. He thought back to encounters he had suffered just a few months before when he was out alone in the wilds. How different life would be with Belwer Disengulp by his side. How much more enjoyable. Driz glanced back over his shoulder to the angry and stubborn grubber. And how much more interesting. "Come along," the smug Swift Neblin continued, starting off down the passage. "We are only making the grubber angrier by loitering in its sight." The passageway narrowed and turned a sharp bend just a few feet further in. Around the bend, the companions found even more trouble, for the corridor ended in a blank stone wall. Belwer moved right up to inspect it, and it was Driz's turn to cross his arms over his chest and gloat. "You have put us in a dangerous spot, little friend," the drow said. "An angry grubber behind, trapping us in a box corridor." Pressing his ear to the stone, Belwer waved Driz off with his hammer hand.
"Merely an inconvenience," the deep gnome assured him. "There is another tunnel beyond, not more than 7 feet."
7 feet of stone," Driz reminded him. But Belwer didn't seem concerned.
"A day," he said. "Perhaps 2.
Belwer held his arms out wide and began a chant too low for Driz to hear clearly, though the drow realized that Belwer was engaged in some sort of spell casting.
"Bivrip!"
Belwer cried. Nothing happened. The burrow warden turned back on Driz and did not seem disappointed.
"A day," he proclaimed again.
"What did you do?" Driz asked him.
"Set my hands a-hummin'," replied the deep gnome. Seeing that Driz was completely at a loss,
Belwer turned on his heel and slammed his hammer hand into the wall. An explosion of sparks brightened the small passage, blinding Driz. By the time the drow's eyes could adjust to the continuing burst of Belwer's punching and hacking, he saw that his swift Neblin companion already had ground several inches of rock into fine dust at his feet.
"Maga Kamara, dark elf!" Belwer cried with a wink. "You did not believe that my people would go to all the trouble of crafting such fine hands for me without puffing a bit of magic into them, did you?"
Driz moved to the side of the passage and sat.
"You are full of surprises, little friend," he answered with a sigh of surrender.
"I am indeed," Belwer roared, and he pounded the stone again, sending flecks flying in every direction.
They were out of the box corridor in a day, as Belwer had promised, and they set off again, traveling now, by the deep gnome's estimation, generally north. Luck had followed them so far, and they both knew it, for they had spent 2 10-days in the wilds and encountered nothing more than a hostile grubber protecting its Baruchis.
A few days later, their luck changed.
"Summon the panther," Belwer bade Drizzt as they crouched in the wide tunnel they had been traveling.
Drizzt did not argue the wisdom of the Burrow Warden's request. He didn't like the green glow ahead any more than Belwer did. A moment later, the black mist swirled and took shape, and Guinevere stood beside them.
"I go first," Drizzt said. "You both follow together, 20 steps behind."
Belwer nodded, and Drizzt turned and started away. Drizzt almost expected the movement when the Svirfneblin's pickaxe hand hooked him and turned him about.
"Be careful," Belwer said.
Drizzt only smiled in reply, touched at the sincerity of his friend's voice, and thinking again how much better it was to have a companion by his side. Then Drizzt dismissed his thoughts and moved away, letting his instincts and experience guide him. He found the glow to be emanating from a hole in the corridor floor. Beyond it, the corridor continued but bent sharply, nearly doubling back on itself. Drizzt fell to his belly and peered down the hole. Another passage about 10 feet below him ran perpendicular to the one he was in, opening a short way ahead into what appeared to be a large cavern.
"What is it?" Belwer whispered, coming up behind.
"Another corridor to a chamber," Drizzt replied. "The glow comes from there."
He lifted his head and looked down into the ensuing darkness of the higher corridor.
"Our tunnel continues," Drizzt reasoned. "We can go right by it."
Belwer looked down at the passageway they had been traveling, noting the turn.
"Devil's back," he reasoned, "and probably comes right out at the side passage we passed an hour ago."
The deep gnome dropped to the dirt and looked into the hole.
"What would make such a glow?"
Drizzt asked him easily, guessing that Belwer's curiosity was as keen as his own.
"Another form of moss?"
"None that I know," Belwer replied.
"Shall we find out?"
Belwer smiled at him, then hooked his pick hand on the ledge and swung over and in, dropping down to the lower tunnel. Drizzt and Guinevere followed silently, the drow, scimitars in hand, again taking the lead as they moved toward the glow. They came into a wide and high chamber, its ceilings far beyond their sight, and a lake of green-glowing, foul-smelling liquid bubbling and hissing 20 feet below them. Dozens of interconnected narrow stone walkways, varying from 1 to 10 feet wide, crisscrossed the gorge, most ending at exits leading into more side corridors.
"Maga Kamara," whispered the stunned Svefneblin,
and Drizzt shared that thought.
"It appears as though the floor was blasted away," Drizzt remarked when he again found his voice.
"Melted away," replied Belwer.
Guessing the liquid's nature, he hacked off a chunk of stone at his side and, tapping Drizzt to get his attention, dropped it into the green lake. The liquid hissed as if in anger where the rock hit, eating away at the stone before it and even sank from sight.
"Acid," Belwer explained.
Drizzt looked at him cautiously, curiously. He knew of acid from his days of training under the wizards of Sorcière in the academy. Wizards often concocted such vile liquids to use in their magical experiments, but Drizzt did not figure that acid would appear naturally or in such quantities.
"Some wizard's working, I would guess," said Belwer. "An experiment out of control. It has probably been here for 100 years, eating away at the floor, sinking down inch by inch."
But what remains of the floor seems secure enough," observed Drizzt, pointing to the walkways, "and we have a score of tunnels to choose from."
"Then let us begin at once," said Belwer. "I do not like this place. We are exposed in the light, and I would not care to take quick flight along such narrow bridges. Not with a lake of acid below me."
Drizzt agreed and took a cautious step out on the walkway, but Guinevere quickly moved past him. Drizzt understood the panther's logic and wholeheartedly agreed.
"Guinevere will lead us," he explained to Belwer. "The panther is the heaviest and quick enough to spring away if a section begins to fall."
The Burrow Warden was not completely satisfied.
"What if Guinevere does not make it to safety?"
he asked, truly concerned.
"What will the acid do to a magical creature?"
Drizzt wasn't certain of the answer.
"Guinevere should be safe," he reasoned, pulling the onyx figurine from his pocket. "I hold the gateway to the panther's home plain."
Guinevere was 100 strides
a dozen strides away by then. The walkway seemed sturdy enough, and Driz set out to follow.
Maga Kamara, I pray you are right, he heard Belwer mumble at his back as he took the first steps from out onto the ledge.
The chamber was huge, several hundred feet across even to the nearest exit. The companions neared the halfway point. Guinevere had already passed it when they heard a strange chanting sound. They stopped and glanced about, searching for the source. A weird-looking creature stepped out from one of the numerous side passages. It was bipedal and black-skinned, with a beaked bird's head and the torso of a man, featherless and wingless. Both of its powerful-looking arms ended in hooked, wicked claws, and its legs ended in three-toed feet. Another creature stepped out from behind it, and another from behind them.
"Relatives?" Belwer asked Drizzt, for the creatures did indeed resemble some weird cross between a dark elf and a bird.
"Hardly," Drizzt replied. "In all of my life, I've never heard of such creatures."
"Doom! Doom!"
came the continuing chant, and the friends looked around to see more of the birdmen stepping out from other passages. They were dire Corbies, an ancient race more common to the southern reaches of the Underdark, though rare even there, and almost unknown in this part of the world. Corbies had never been of much concern to any of the Underdark races, for the birdmen's methods were crude and their numbers were small. To a passing band of adventurers, however, a flock of savage dire Corbies meant trouble indeed.
"Nor have they ever encountered such creatures," Belwer agreed, "but I do not believe they are pleased to see us."
The chant became a series of horrifying shrieks as the Corbies began to disperse out into the walkways, walking at first, but occasionally breaking into quick trots, their anxiety obviously increasing.
"You are wrong, my little friend," Trist remarked. "I believe that they are quite pleased to have their dinner delivered to them."
Belwer looked around helplessly. Nearly all of their escape routes were already cut off, and they couldn't hope to get out without a fight.
"Dark Elf, I can think of a thousand places I would rather do battle,"
the Borough Warden said with a resigned shrug and a shudder as he took another look down into the acid lake. Taking a deep breath to calm himself, Belwer began his ritual to enchant his magical hands.
"Move while you chant," Driz instructed him, leading him on. "Let us get as close as to an exit as we can before the fighting begins."
One group of Corbies closed rapidly at the party's side, but Guinevere, with a mighty spring that spanned two of the walkways, cut the birdmen off.
"Bivrip!" Belwer cried, completing his spell, and he turned toward the impending battle.
"Guinevere can take care of that group," Driz assured him, quickening his steps toward the nearest wall.
Belwer saw the drow's reasoning. Still, another group of enemies had come out of the exit that they were making for. The momentum of Driz's leap carried the panther straight into the pack of Corbies, bowling two of them right off the walkway. The birdmen shrieked horribly as they fell to their deaths, but the remaining companions seemed unbothered at the loss, drooling and chanting, "Doom! Doom!" They tore in at Guinevere with their sharp talons. The panther had formidable weapons of its own. Each swat of a great claw tore the life from a Corby or sent it tumbling from the walkway to the acid lake. But while the cat continued to slash into the birdmen's ranks, the fearless Corbies continued to fight back, and more rushed in eagerly to join. A second group came from the opposite direction and surrounded Guinevere. Belwer set himself on a narrow section of the walkway and let the line of Corbies come to him, Driz taking a parallel route along a walkway 15 feet to his friend's side, did likewise, drawing his scimitar somewhat reluctantly. The drow could feel the savage instincts of the hunter welling up within him as the battle drew near, and he fought back with all of his willpower to sublimate the wild urges. He was Driz Dorn, no more the hunter, and he would face his foes fully in control of his every movement. Then the Corbies were upon him, flailing away, shrieking the frenzied chants. Driz did little more than parry in those first seconds, the flats of his blades working marvelously to deflect each attempted strike. The scimitar spun and whirled, but the drow, refusing to loose the killer within him, made little headway in his fight. After several minutes, he still faced off against the first Corby that had come at him. Belwer was not so reserved. Corby after Corby rushed in at the little Svefneblin, only to be pounded to a sudden halt by the Burrow Warden's explosive hammer hand. The electrical jolt and the sheer force of the blow often killed the Corby where it stood, but Belwer never waited long enough to find out. Following each hammer blow, the deep gnome's pickaxe hand came across in a roundhouse arc, sweeping the latest victim from the walkway. The Svefneblin had dropped half a dozen of the birdmen before he got the chance to look over at Driz. He recognized at once the inner struggle the drow was fighting.
"Maga Kamara!" Belwer screamed. "Fight them, Dark Elf, and fight to win! They will show no mercy! There can be no truce! Kill them! Cut them down! Or surely they shall kill you!"
Driz hardly heard Belwer's words. Tears rimmed his lavender eyes, though even in that blur the almost magical rhythm of his weaving blades did not slow. He caught his opponent off balance and reversed the motion of a thrust, slamming the birdman in the head with a palm of his scimitar. The corby dropped like a stone and rolled. It would have fallen from the ledge, but Driz stepped across it and held it in place. Belwer shook his head and belted another adversary. The corby hopped backward, its chest smoking and charred by the jarring impact of the enchanted hammer hand. The corby looked at Belwer in blank disbelief, but uttered not a sound, nor made any move at all, as a pickaxe hooked in, catching it in the shoulder and launching it out over the acid lake. Guinevere flustered the hungry attackers as the corbies closed in on the panther's back. Thinking the kill at hand, Guinevere crouched and sprang. The panther soared through the green light as though it had taken flight, landing on yet another of the walkways, fully 30 feet away. Skidding on the smooth stone, Guinevere just managed to halt before toppling over the ledge into the acid pool. The corbies glanced around in stunned amazement for just a moment, then took up their shrieks and wails and set off along the walkways in pursuit. A single corby, near where Guinevere had landed, ran fearlessly to battle the cat. Guinevere's teeth found its neck in an instant and squeezed the life from it. But while the panther was so engaged, the corby's devilish trap showed another twist. From far above in the high-ceiling cavern, a corby at last saw a victim in position. The birdman wrapped its arms around the heavy boulder on the ledge as beside it and pushed out, dropping with the stone. At the last second, Guinevere saw the plummeting monster and scrambled out of its path. The corby, in its suicidal ecstasy, didn't even care. The birdman slammed into the walkway, the momentum of the heavy boulder shattering the narrow bridge to pieces. The great panther tried to spring out again, but the stone underneath Guinevere's feet disintegrated before they could set and spring. Claws scratching futilely at the crumbling bridge, Guinevere followed the corby and its boulder down into the acid lake. Hearing the elated shouts of the birdmen behind him, Belwer spun about just in time to see Guinevere's fall. Driz, too, engaged at the time, for another corby flailed away at him, and the one he had dropped was stirring back to consciousness between his feet. Did not see, but the drow did not have to see. The figurine in Driz's pocket heated suddenly, wisps of smoke rising ominously from Driz's piwafwi cloak. Driz could guess easily enough what had happened to his dear Guinevere. The drow's eyes narrowed, the sudden fire melting away his tears. He welcomed the hunter. Corbies fought with fury. The highest honor of their existence was to die in battle, and those closest to Driz d'Urden soon realized that the moment of their highest honor was upon them. The drow thrust both of his scimitars straight out, each finding an eye of the corby facing him. The hunter pulled out the blades, spun them over in his hands, and plunged them down into the birdman at his feet. He snapped the scimitars up immediately and plunged them down again, taking grim satisfaction in the sound of their smooth cut. Then the drow dived headlong into the corbies ahead of him, his blades cutting in from every possible angle. Hit a dozen times before it ever launched a single swing, the first corby was quite dead before it even fell. Then the second, then the third. Driz backed them up into a wider section of the walkway. They came at him three at a time. They died at his feet, three at a time. "Get them, Dark Elf!" mumbled Belwar, seeing his friend explode into action. The corby coming to meet the Burrow Warden turned its head to see what had caught Belwar's attention. When it turned back, it was met squarely in the face by the deep gnome's hammer hand. Pieces of beak flew in every direction, and that unfortunate corby was the first of its species to take flight in several millennium of evolution. Its short airborne excursion pushed its companions back from the deep gnome, and the corby landed, dead on its back, many feet away from Belwar. The enraged deep gnome wasn't finished with this one. He raced up, bowling from the walkway, the single corby who managed to get back to intercept him. When he arrived at last at his beakless victim, Belwar drove his pickaxe hand deep into his chest. With that single muscled arm, the Burrow Warden hoisted the dead corby high into the air and let out a horrifying shriek of his own. The other corbies hesitated. Belwar looked to Drizzt and was dismayed. A score of corbies crowded in on the wide section of the walkway where the drow made his stand. Another dozen lay dead at Drizzt's feet, their blood running off the ledge and dripping into the acid lake in rhythmic hissing plops. But it wasn't the odds that Belwar feared. With his precise movements and measured thrusts, Drizzt was undeniably winning. High above the drow, though, another suicidal corby and his pet rock took a dive. Belwar believed that Driz's life had come to a crashing end, but the hunter sensed the peril. A corby reached for Driz. With a flash of the drow scimitars, both its arms flew free of their respective shoulders. In the same dazzling moment, Driz snapped his bloodied scimitars into the sheaths and bolted for the edge of the platform. He reached the lip and leaped out toward Belwar just as the suicidal boulder-riding corby crashed down, taking the platform and a score of its kin with it into the acid pool. Belwar heaved his beakless trophy into the corbies facing him and dropped to his knees, reaching out with his pickaxe hand to try to aid his soaring friend. Driz caught the Burrow Warden's hand and the ledge at the same time, slamming his face into the stone but finding a hold. The jolt ripped the drow's piwafwi, though, and Belwar watched helplessly as the onyx figurine rolled out and dropped toward the acid. Driz caught it between his feet. Belwar nearly laughed aloud at the futility and hopelessness of it all. He looked over his shoulder to see the corbies resuming their advance.
"Dark Elf, surely it has been fun,"
the swift Neblin said resignedly to Driz, but the drow's response stole the levity from Belwar as surely as stole the blood from the deep gnome's face.
"Swing me,"
Driz growled so powerfully that Belwar obeyed before he even realized what he was doing. Driz rolled out and came swinging back toward the walkway, and when he bounced onto the stone, every muscle in his body jerked violently to aid his momentum. He rolled right around the bottom of the walkway, scrambling and clawing with his arms and legs to gain a footing back up behind the crouching deep gnome. By the time Belwar realized what Drizzt had done and thought to turn around, Drizzt had his scimitars out and slicing across the face of the first approaching corby.
"Hold this," Drizzt bade his friend, flicking the onyx figurine to Belwar with his toe.
Belwar caught the item between his arms and fumbled it into a pocket. Then the deep gnome stood back and watched, taking up a rear guard as Driz cut a devastating path to the nearest exit. 5 minutes later, to Belwar's absolute amazement, they were running free down a darkened tunnel. The frustrated shrieks of "Doom! Doom!" fast fading behind them. Ladies and gentlemen, this brings us to the end of our next episode of R.A. Salvatore's The Legend of Drizzt, Book 2, Exile.
thank you so very much, everyone, for listening in. I really want to say again, I appreciate everyone who had reached out to me to say hello and tell me how much they really enjoyed listening to everything I had done up to this point. Thank you for those of you who are some of my biggest fans, which I can kind of say because you've said you were really enjoying everything. It's so cool. Thank you so much. We'll continue again. I'm going to try to keep up on everything. I apologize. It's been so long since my last episode. Just had a lot of personal things going on, so I apologize. I try to do this as often as I can. Please tell all of your friends who play Dungeons & Dragons, who love the stories of Driz DeWarden, the heroes of Mithril Hall, because I will go and continue on with the Legend of Driz until I no longer can or I run out of books. You can find me on Twitter at Crowe, Crowe, _HVVH, or on Instagram, Chadwick1224, or Facebook, Chadwick Daigle. That is DAIGLE. Thank you so much. Leave your reviews on any systems or formats you're listening to that allow you to leave such things. Tell everybody, share it. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day and good night.